Your first from Mr. Shermo. Whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is David Shermel. I represent Major Ronald Salmon, an applicant for Social Security disability benefits. Where I want to begin is an uncontested issue as to why remand should occur in this case. Very specific argument. SSR 8528. On this point, Social Security has offered no defense at all, and I want to explain that. In our opening brief, appellate brief, at pages 34 and 35, as well as in our reply brief at pages 1 through 3, we argued consistent with the magistrate judge's analysis, which is found at 1459 and 1460 of the record, that Major Salmon's loss of his medical license, his ability to practice medicine, which was caused by his mental impairments and his substance use impairments, precluded him from returning to his past relevant work as a physician. That's an unremarkable proposition. You can't return to practice medicine if you don't have a license to be a doctor. Now, under SSR 8528, the agency's own policy, Major Salmon was entitled to...
Just a technical point. It's just of interest to me. The plaintiff was in the Army for what, 10 years?
Over 10 years, correct, Your Honor.
So he didn't retire after 20 years.
I'm sorry.
He did not retire after 20 years, for example.
He did not.
So I was in the Army for 4 years. I was a captain. I'm not called Captain Barksdale. I never have been. Mm-hmm. So he's technically not Major Salmon, but that's only of interest to somebody that used to be in the Army.
I was trying to be respectable. I wasn't sure to say, I'll just say Salmon, Mr. Salmon, or Dr. Salmon.
Good.
I was attempting as a civilian to be respectful.
No, you were attempting to play up on the fact that he had served in the military, as you've done in your brief, and that's fine, but let's stay within what's correct.
Okay. Well, former Dr. Salmon.
Don't refer to me as private first class.
That's right.
Understood. I learned a lesson today. Thank you, Your Honors. Under SSR 8528, Salmon was entitled to a favorable Step 2 severity finding, even if his impairments would otherwise be deemed non-severe.
Is that because he can't go back to his previous job?
Correct.
Specifically?
Correct.
That's what the reg says specifically.
That's what the ruling says.
Cool. The SSR
8528
says that.
The most important aspect of SSR 8528 that I wanted to mention is that, or this issue that we raised, is SSA has offered no defense whatsoever on SSR 8528. If you read their brief, SSR 8528 is not even mentioned in their brief. It's not mentioned in their 28J letter. So one of the central issues which we raised on this appeal, they have offered no defense.
And what about the VA situation?
In terms of the VA rating?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important issue. And one of the things I wanted to mention with respect to that is SSA has submitted a 28J letter on a case called Garcia that came out subsequent to briefing being considered, being completed. But at 880 F3rd 700, this court amended, corrected, and superseded the decision that that had been previously issued. And it's important because the current Garcia decision says something very different than the original Garcia decision.
Well, they filed a supplemental letter brief on that. I mean, a 28J letter on
that. On the wrong decision. That decision no longer
exists. Also filed a supplemental 28J on the amended opinion. But
I never received that.
Well, I'm probably misremembering, but I thought they had.
But in any event, I want to mention footnote 8. What's crucial about footnote 8 in the Garcia decision is it says that the VA rating in that case actually tended to indicate non-disability because it stated that the disability for VA purposes in that case started after the date last insured. So in addition, Garcia, unlike this case, involved an allegation of PTSD 30 years after the fact and for which there was no treatment before the date last insured, nor after the date last insured. That's very factually different than our case. In addition, if you look at Garcia, it's important to note that SSA's own doctors support our claimant's position. In Garcia, SSA's doctors contradicted the claimant's position. So we're a very, very different case than Garcia.
Would any one of these reasons be enough to remand back that SSR 8528, the failure to consider the VA rating sufficiently, and also that SSA's own doctors said he had all these problems, which is more than minimal?
Any of them independent.
Any one of them, but
correct.
But can you combine them and say certainly all together? Do we have case law that says you can combine the reasons, and therefore, because even if one independently wouldn't be enough, that all three of them together are?
Well, certainly if you look at the Loza case, 219 F3rd, pages 391, 392, 393, and 394, it gets into that type of a scenario where it says, certainly the cumulative effect of these errors is significant. And I do want to mention, this case is really unique. It's not many times that you're going to have a claimant's attorney standing before you and saying, please defer to SSA's own doctors. That's really remarkable. The agency takes the position that even if 100 of their own doctors opine that the claimant had a severe impairment, the ALJ could still say it's non-severe. I think that's a little bit extreme.
So severe, is it really, when is it?
It's not what it sounds like.
Yes, severe is not really severe.
Correct, it's de minimis.
Severe is de minimis. This is a very odd thing.
Yeah, it's a quirk of the regulations. And what's really interesting is if you look at this court's Stone decision, it goes through that. Loza does as well. And it talks about if you did a literal application of the word severe and what you would think that would mean, very few impairments would actually be severe.
So it's your position that when Dr. Patterson says it severely interfered with all gainful employment, that that's a positive opinion for you?
Well, that's even beyond severity. That gets to the point of saying actual disability.
And Dr. Lara, who says it will mental health conditions will prevent all employment.
Again, that is so far in excess of step two. That's step five disability.
Okay. And Dr. Rich says moderately limited. Was that?
That is well more than severe.
Dr. Thompson says moderately limited in some areas and not significantly limited in other areas.
And those state agency doctors affirmatively indicate that the impairment is severe. That is important.
Okay, and so we don't look at just one of them that says not significantly limited on make simple work decisions. We look at the overall total rating at the end.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And Stevenson says impairment affects ability to do a whole bunch of things. Is that de minimis?
That's well more than de minimis.
And Purcell,
Purcell's the treating doctor who offered an opinion that would actually be consistent with disability, not just step two severity.
But inconsistent, in a sense, with his own notes, because he was the only treating physician that provided testimony, wasn't he?
Well, the interesting thing, yes, that's correct, Your Honor, the only treating physician. But I want to give a timeline here. I think the timeline's important, and we go into this in our reply brief. The entries in the record that SSA discusses, every single one of them, most of them which are wrong, they just don't say it. They don't say remission. Some of them are just flat out wrong. But even the two that did, both of those occurred before any of the opinions were offered in this case by their own doctors or by the treating physician or the other doctors at the VA. So those doctors were aware of those entries and still opined, offered opinions that were consistent with at least severity. I think it's crucial, it is so important not to conflate the standard for step two severity, which is de minimis, versus a finding of disability at step five, which is a far higher standard.
Do you have to show that you would win under step, go all the way through, or if you meet step two, we automatically go back? Do you have to show that had they done the proper thing, you would have won at step five to win?
Well, I think we can do that.
But do you have to?
Do we have to? I would say no, and I'll say the reason why. Because if you look at SSR 8528, if you look at agency policy in general with respect to step two, if you look at the statute, What the statute entitles a claimant to is a determination as to whether they can perform their prior work or other work. That determination has actually never been made in this case. The finding that SSA made, as this court has recognized at LOSA, it's a threshold test. Step two is a threshold test to weed out only the most frivolous of claims. There is no possibility, it is impossible as a fair-minded individual, I believe, if you look at this record when it includes three opinions from their own doctors to say that the de minimis standard of severity was not exceeded, that is really extreme.
Now, along that line, in your brief, you refer to the district judge performing, in essence, well, not in essence, you say, we review a district court summary judgment ruling de novo. Why do you say Judge McBride was engaged in summary judgment?
That's the procedure that occurs in Social Security cases.
Not according to the local rules of his court, which said he reviewed it as an appeal. And, all we're doing is looking to see whether there's substantial evidence. It's not a summary judgment.
There are multiple...
Because what would happen if we say, well, you erred on summary judgment? Would the case be tried in district court?
Judge McBride is not the trier of fact. This court, and SSA states this in their own brief, this isn't just my position, this is what SSA has said. This court steps into the shoes of the district court. The district court is entitled to no deference at all as a matter of law.
I'm just trying to keep us cabined within how we handle some SSA actions filed in district court and appeals to this court. It's not a summary judgment procedure.
They're treated as an appeal. In other words, there's no findings of fact by Judge McBride. So when this court has a case come before it that Social Security, they owe the same deference to the ALJ that Judge McBride did.
Whether
they owe no deference to Judge McBride.
There is substantial evidence. That's correct.
Correct. There's no deference to Judge McBride whatsoever.
But we're also looking at whether the legal processes are followed, right?
That is absolutely correct.
And we do look at those de novo, don't we?
Correct. And there's
so
a case.
We look at substantial deference to the overall determination, but evaluating whether particular processes are adhered to according to the SSA's own processes, we look at that on our own by looking at the rails and saying this was or was not.
That's correct. The only other case we've ever brought to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is a published decision called Copeland, which stands exactly for that proposition. You look at the legal issues de novo, no deference is owed to the district court judge.
So do you think that Judge Cureton got it right?
The magistrate judge definitely got it right. And the thing
I
want
to... You agree completely with the magistrate judge's opinion, or is there anything about it that you disagree with?
Yeah, I think it's very, very strong, especially with respect to the point that how can you possibly say this man has had no effect on his ability to work when he lost his medical license? It's impossible to say that. It can't make sense. In some sense, we're here at the circuit court level, but this case should not have gotten this far. This case is as simple as it seems. Every single doctor in the record offers an opinion which is consistent with our position and which is contrary to theirs. Even if you look past that, they have never offered an SSR 8528 point, even though we raised it in our opening brief, mentioned it in our reply, and if SSA offers a defense at this point, it's waived. SSR 8528 was argued in our opening brief. SSA has never, ever mentioned it. I want to mention who my client is, though, because I think this matters, to say that there's no effect on this man. If you look at 292 of the record, that's my claimant's earnings record and what he paid taxes on, and he paid quite a bit of taxes, my client was a man who was earning over $400,000 a year. He spiraled down. He's now episodically homeless, as the record reflects. In addition, he meets the technical catastrophic standard for SSI eligibility. Not that he's entitled to it. What I'm saying is you have to meet the technical criteria to be poor enough to even apply for SSI.
Does he get to go back regardless of what we do?
Actually, what's really crucial to understand here, Your Honor, there's two claims, disability insurance benefits and SSI. Disability insurance benefits is based on his work record. That's what he earned through his years of work. If this court affirms the district court's decision, Mr. Salmon is going to be barred for life from ever applying for disability insurance benefits because the ALJ's decision was issued after his date last insured. So he is barred for life unless he wins this appeal.
So he can't do changed circumstances?
Cannot. This case is over if the claimant does not win here today.
But on the other aspect of it, he's still...
The SSI application he can apply for, but SSI is not based on his earnings record. SSI is a form of welfare, frankly. But the disability insurance benefits is something he earned through paying a lot of taxes into Social Security. And what he earned through those taxes was the right to have a determination as to whether he could perform his prior work or other work. That determination has not occurred because the ALJ short-circuited this decision. By denying it step two, which is a de minimis threshold level, we never got to the real issue of what Dr. Salmon can and cannot do. I see my time's up. If there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Simons.
May it please the court. I'm Keith Simonson, and I represent the commissioner of Social Security, Nancy A. Berryhill, the appellee in this case. The ALJ was right on the law, right on the facts, and got this case right. Now, we concede that all the medical opinions stated that Salmon had a severe impairment, but the ALJ discussed the entirety of the medical evidence demonstrating that Salmon did not have a severe impairment. He reviewed the treatment notes, Salmon's application and testimony, his activities, and the medical opinions, and he properly discounted these medical opinions, and Salmon does not argue otherwise.
So wait a minute, all of the medical, you concede that all of the medical show that he would meet the step two, the prong two.
We all concede that they say that he has a severe impairment.
So, but it's, he's gone behind the conclusion to look at the underlying basis for it on each of them, is that right?
Well, yes, Your Honor, and what we cited to what the ALJ actually relied on was Dr. Purcell's treatment notes. Dr. Purcell was his only treating physician during his time of disability. Even though Salmon complained of cognitive functions, every time he saw Dr. Salmon over a two-year period at seven different treating... Dr. Purcell over 2 years, thank you, Your Honor, during seven treatments, he consistently said, I'm doing well, I'm doing fairly well. Dr. Purcell consistently noted he had goal-directed thought processes, alert cognition, intact concentration, intact memory, good insight, good judgment, full alertness, and he was responsive to his medication. It was either mild or in remission during those time frames.
What about the fact that the opposing counsel discusses the timing, that this is before that it became so bad?
Your Honor, he's had PTSD and depression since 1985, or 1995. He worked till 2006 with that depression and PTSD. Then he lost his medical license. And, to address his fact, after even he lost his medical license, he performed two other jobs, both as a medical clinic systems administrator and a assisted living facility administrator in September 2009, a job he quit, as he told the VA, for reasons other than his medical license, or other than his medical condition. And then at that point in time, he applied for disability. But after that, he considered to seek any treatment for 2 years until he saw Dr. Salmon. And then he also did not even consider himself to be disabled in 2011 and 2012, even though his VA disability 100% rating was rated all the way back to August of 2011.
You mean until he saw Dr. Purcell?
When he saw Dr. Purcell, that's right.
I'm sorry, you said Dr.
Yeah,
Salmon.
I keep saying I'm sorry. also, during his alleged time of disability, Salmon also performed volunteer work with the juvenile justice system, and he also studied for GRE for his master's degree. Now, the ALJ recited all these notes, all these conditions, all these activities, and find that Salmon did not have a severe impairment. Now, we concede that all the medical evidence, all the medical opinions say that he has a severe impairment.
Doesn't he have a severe impairment now, today? And does it matter if, even if he didn't have one before, does it matter if he has one today?
Well, when he was going through all of his treatment with Dr. Purcell, as long as he was taking his medication, he was okay. What Salmon is focusing is on the medical opinions. The ALJ property relied on the treatment notes.
Should we at all consider whether or not subsequent events have made it very clear that he's not in good
stead? What subsequent events have happened since that? I'm not really sure what his date last was insured is. He brings up a good point. But if his date last insured was after the ALJ's decision, and I don't have that in front of me, then he can still go back and reapply for those Title II benefits that he's talking about.
So what about, did the commissioner consider the VA situation?
Yes, Your Honor. What the ALJ did is he looked at the...
the ALJ.
Okay, so he did consider the 100% VA disability finding. In fact, Salmon never argued that the ALJ, or he claims that the ALJ never even failed to mention the 100% unemployability rating. However, this argument fails for three reasons. First, he's waived that argument. He never made that argument at the district court.
Did the district court, did the ALJ consider the V, how do we know that that was considered?
Well, Your Honor, when the ALJ was going through, he acknowledged that Salmon had 100% VA disability rating. He cited that on the record on page 115. And then he discussed the VA's treating notes and the opinions in detail, spent about 2.5 pages doing that. Then he said, he said that the decisions that of any other government agency regarding whether an individual is disabled is based on its findings is not binding on ALJ.
But it may not be binding, but it is an important fact to take into account according to our case law.
Yes, Your Honor. The ALJ then concluded that the VA disability findings, plural, were not binding. Now, as we stated in Chambliss, that's relevant here. Chambliss says that a VA rating of a total and permanent disability is not legally binding on the commissioner and is not entitled to great weight and must be merely considered by the ALJ. And as I just stated, he did consider them, and he found that the VA findings were not binding on him. And he made his decision based on the record as a whole.
Now, plaintiff points out in his, I don't recall if it's his opening brief or his reply, about a change in the SSA regs concerning consideration of a VA disability, and he's claiming the reg doesn't apply to him because his situation predated the reg. Would you clear that up for us, please?
Well, we've made some changes to the regulation, and we concede that the regulation we cited, and as we explain in our brief, as we change it, the Social Security does not have to consider the VA findings at all. But that does not apply to this case, the new regulations as we stated them. But what the ALJ did do is he recited the 100% VA disability rating, went through all the VA findings, and found that they were not binding. Now, to address his other question on SSR 85-28, this argument fails for two reasons. He's arguing that the 85-28 and the unique features of his work, specifically the loss of his medical license, entitles him to be found should make us go past step two. Well, first, he's waived this argument. He never brought that up in his district court briefs. In fact, the word unique feature does not appear anywhere in his district court briefs. Salmon merely cited to page 3 of the SSR, of this lengthy SSR, which discusses basic work activities and performance of significant activity. Page 3 does not mention unique features of work. And as this court has held, the party must press and not merely intimate his argument during the proceedings in the district court. He didn't do that. More importantly, his argument is moot. He had other work after he lost his medical license, or after it was suspended. He performed a job as a medical clinic systems administrator and as an assisted living facilitator in 2006 and 2007. That's on a record on page 318 and 320. Therefore, the loss of his medical license has no effect on his other past relevant work.
It's very unusual. Don't you think this is very unusual? I've never seen, I mean, I don't see nearly as many as you would, but I've never seen one where every single doctor finds that they more than meet the de minimis, and it's de minimis, and we have this adverse finding. This is strikingly unusual, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, the Stone standard, which is the standard in this court, is not a de minimis standard. It is actually...
Well, it's anything more than a slight abnormality.
Right, it's a slight abnormality.
Slight abnormality.
Slight abnormality.
It's a very low standard.
Yes, Your Honor, with a minimum effect. And using the PRTF, as this court has acknowledged in Garcia, when we're looking at mental impairments, we're allowed to use the PRTF to evaluate those mental impairments. And if it is not a severe impairment at step two, if it's only mild limitations. Now, as the court found in Garcia, he had 100% VA disability for PTSD, but yet they still found that the severe impairment was not, or the PTSD was not a severe impairment at step two. The ALJ went through the same process here. He evaluated the four broad areas of functioning and found that the severity of Salmon's mental impairments using the PRT were only mild, and therefore,
so what is the answer to my question of whether this is unusual?
I'm sorry?
My question was, what is this unusual?
No, Your Honor. It's a sequential five-step process, and we make determinations at each of the five steps. So at step two, we look at the severity. If we were to just consider only the medical opinions and decide we need to go past step two to go to step three because there's more medical opinions one way or the other, then
we're all one way.
Yes, Your Honor. But the treating physician consistently recorded that he did not have those severe impairments. So first, only to look at the medical opinions, that would be a policy change. What we'd be doing is skipping right over from step two to step three anytime there's more in one way than there are in the other. Well, that would lead to doctor shopping. For example, the ALJ could have one opinion, and it could be in his favor, and he finds not severe. Between the time of the ALJ's decision and going to the appeals council, he could go out and get three more opinions. So if we can make a bright line rule today that more are in favor, well, then that just means a remand.
What does he do with the diabetes? The diabetes determination?
That
the new evidence about the diabetes that the magistrate judge discussed.
I don't remember.
You don't remember that? The new evidence that Salmon submitted to the appeals council after the ALJ decision raises an issue that Salmon's diabetes may now have impact on the ability to work, and the court is remanding the case. It was remanding. They should look at that again. Is that not before us in this appeal in any way?
I don't think he raised the diabetes as an issue before the court, so therefore we did not brief it.
Okay.
So what we're saying is if we're only looking at the medical opinions in themselves, and it is more in his favor as opposed to in the ALJ's favor, well, then this would be a policy change. It's taking the ALJ out of the step
two determination.
But that's
not what we have here. That the parade of horribles that you've just been discussing at some length is not present here because we don't have this doctor shopping. We don't have, well, they have two and we have one. We have six or so all going the same way.
Yes, Your Honor, and ALJ properly discounted each one of those. He noted that they seemed to be based mainly on the subjective complaints of Salma. None of them consider the mere fact that that treatment, that his PTSD and depression were cured with treatment, not at least were better with treatment. And they never discussed Dr. Purcell's treatment notes, which consistently recorded that he had normal examination findings. So the ALJ properly discounted all that. Plaintiff's not arguing that he didn't. He's just arguing that because there's all these opinions that we must weigh in his favor.
Why was plaintiff, just educate me a little bit on SSA procedure, why was he allowed to supplement the record when he appealed to the SSA counsel with this chart or analysis Purcell did, which was in addition to the evidence before the ALJ about his treatment of plaintiff?
In our regulations, they can continue to submit new evidence before the appeals council, and that is part of the record before here.
Right.
But we also get to look at, you know, what actually happened during that time frame. Now, you talk about Dr. Purcell's treatment notes. Well, the appeals council properly discounted all them, because if you look at his treatment notes, he said in 17 out of the 20 functional areas in his check-the-box form that he had substantial or complete loss of ability to perform. Well, that drastically contrasts with his treatment notes, which consistently recorded goal-directed thought processes, alert cognition, intact concentration, intact memory, good insight, good judgment.
You say that the council, SSA council, discounted this new evidence submitted on the appeal, but all I saw was a one line saying the ALJ was correct, in essence. There's no analysis.
Well, they declined to review, and they did attach it as part of their evidence. But just by using Greenspan, this court's case of Greenspan, Dr. Purcell's opinion is definitely contrasts with his treatment notes. In addition to what I said, in his opinion, Dr. Purcell said, well, he has suicidal ideations. He's marked 7 times in his treatment records that he denied all that. Also, in his current, in a last opinion, he said his current and last year's GAF scores were 50, which contrasted with the 65 he consistently recorded in his treatment notes. So therefore, it's just invalid on its face, and by Greenspan, the SSA could properly discount that. In summary, Your Honor, the ALJ was right on the law, right on the facts, and made the right decision. This court should reject Salmon's unprecedented claim that the ALJ does not have the authority to decide whether an impairment is severe. The court must uphold the ALJ's decision. To rule that a severity determination may be based solely on medical opinions would result in a policy change. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Sherman.
Your Honor, so I wanted to start off by answering a question that you asked, because I did this for SSA for 10 years. I was their senior disability appellate litigator in Region 3. I've done thousands and thousands of these cases. I've read thousands more. It's incredibly unusual that a claimant's attorney is standing before you arguing based on the opinions of SSA's own doctors. That, in fact, is rare, especially when every single SSA doctor, as they concede, supports our position. The other thing is, counsel for SSA was unclear as to the date last insured. I want to provide the court with the citations in the record as to what it is. The date last insured was December 31st, 2013. That's at 112, 114, 288, 297, 342, and 357 of the record. Because this ALJ decision was issued in January of 2015, if the ALJ's decision is affirmed, Mr. Salmon will be precluded for the rest of his life from ever applying for Social Security disability insurance benefits again.
Is the diabetes issue before us or not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Is the diabetes issue before us or not?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. The Fifth Circuit has held repeatedly that evidence that's submitted for the first time to the Appeals Council can be considered by this court.
But do you argue that that's a basis for remand?
No, we don't, to be clear.
We can't remand for that reason.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed. I want to mention the LOSA decision. I think this is a critical decision because that was a 100% VA rating like this case. But this case is even more compelling than LOSA because, unlike in LOSA, we're relying on SSA's own doctor's opinions. LOSA did not have that. We're relying on SSA's own psychiatrists and psychologists.
Between, you say we're relying on the SSA doctor's opinions, and you've got Purcell as the treating physician. And he has notes that say one thing, and then whatever summary he prepared for the appeal to the Appeals Council apparently offers a different view. So,
that's not SSA's doctor. That's the claimant's treating doctor.
Right.
I'm talking about just SSA's doctor. Even if you ignored the treating doctor here, we win based on their doctors. Their doctors' opinions favor us. We're not arguing against them.
None of them were treating physicians, were they?
No, they were not. No, in fact, they'd be prohibited under SSA's regulations from offering an opinion if they were. I just want to mention, I think this is really important. They're talking about waiver of SSR 8528. 8528 is not mentioned in their brief. If they want to argue waiver, they waived waiver. In addition to this, I wanted to mention at 1459 through 1460, the magistrate judge noted that the loss of license showed that the finding of step two non-severity here was erroneous. Overall, I think this is an unusual case. That's why we brought it. We don't go to the circuit often. Why did we go to the circuit here? Because every single opinion, including their own doctors, favors our opinion, and it favors our position. And most importantly, every single one of the doctors, including their own doctors, had the information SSA now relies upon and still opined that the claimant's impairment was severe. We have more than satisfied the incredibly low de minimis standard of step two severity based on a record of treatment, which you didn't have in Garcia. There was no record of treatment here. And in addition, the uniform opinions of SSA's own doctors. This case is truly unique in that way.
So how would you distinguish Garcia? Because of a record of treatment, or what else would distinguish?
Yeah, I would distinguish Garcia based on three grounds. The first ground would be this. The opinion of 100% VA rating in Garcia did not relate to the relevant time period. The decision in Garcia, the VA finding in Garcia related to the time period after. The VA rating in Garcia actually proved non-disability, not disability. That case, first of all, never should have been brought. But the VA rating in that case actually tended to confirm non-disability. In addition, there was no treatment for PTSD in that case, not only before the date last insured, but after the date last insured and through the entire time period. There is treatment for PTSD and substance problems and depression in this record. The other thing I would actually say with respect to this is that's different from Garcia is in Garcia, if you read the revised decision that came out, the opinion of SSA state agency doctors was that there was insufficient evidence prior to the date last insured. In other words, the Garcia state agency doctors were against the claimant. The state agency doctors in this case support our position. That is very unlike Garcia. I'm sorry I've run over. If there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm okay if you're ready.